Hello, welcome to another episode of Data Science with Sam. Imagine this, a cancer patient walks into a clinic. Their treatment plan isn't based on population averages or clinical trial statistics from 5 years ago. Instead, it's tailored to their unique genetic profile, their real-time response data, and patterns identified across millions of similar cases worldwide, all synthesized in seconds by AI. Science fiction? Not anymore. But here's the catch, that AI is only as good as the data it learns from. And in healthcare, data is messy, biased, and often incomplete. Today, we're diving into the intersection of artificial intelligence and cancer care with someone who lives at the crossroads every day. Dr. Srima Sarov, a practicing oncologist and an AI and data science enthusiast at OncoNexus. Welcome to the show, Dr. Srima. I'm very happy to have you here.
Thank you so much, Sam, for that kind introduction.
Let's start at the beginning. Most people choose one lane, medicine or technology. You choose both. What inspired you to combine oncology, data science, and AI?
I have worked in the crossroads of technology and oncology for a long time, even before AI existed, when I was working on certain EHR platforms to improve how certain patients were diagnosed and treated with a rare condition called heparin-induced thrombocytopenia. And this was an old project from back in 2017. That had ultimately gone on to win an American Society of Hematology Choosing Wisely Championship and is still in use at the university today. But that project taught me that care can be different, and care doesn't always have to be manual or handwritten or even necessarily EHR written, as is the case in today's world, the default, so to speak. And so when artificial intelligence came about and started gaining foothold in medicine, that was the next very natural choice as to know and understand how to harness this very important tool that we have in use today in the world of oncology to not only improve care and make it safer and better for our patients, but also to improve care to make it safer and more productive, as well as more worthwhile for the providers alike. And that's what we are doing at OncoNexus. I can't hear you.
That's fascinating. So you are, Phil, you are actually seeing these patterns that the traditional methods couldn't capture. You know, sometimes we probably have to blend in technology with, healthcare science to get the best result. So how has the dual perspective, this clinician and the data scientist or AI technology, shaped the way you think about modern healthcare? Like, if you can share some experience, like personal experiences from your journey, that'll be great.
Absolutely. So going back to the pre-AI era, when we were harnessing softwares to make patient care better, and we put into the EHR system a certain protocol for heparin-induced thrombocytopenia that led to compulsory reporting of a score called 4T score, before patients were tested for a certain disease, it led to a 3-day reduction in hospital stay alongside $1 million plus in savings for the hospital and a quantified reduction in morbidity and mortality for the patients. In today's day and age, when AI came about, I started seeing that a number of AI tools are available and they all do their one niche job, so to speak. A patient comes in and you probably have a software that's helping you write that note better. There is probably a software that's automatically answering phones. And there's a software that's probably helping you with coding and billing. The issue with that is that it becomes so fragmented between the 3 or 4 different softwares because they are not talking to each other. that care actually ends up getting more fragmented and feeling as if you are more burdened with the system as opposed to the system actually solving your problems. And so what the system actually needs, what the patient and the doctor actually needs, is something that is able to answer all of those problems in an integrated, coordinated manner at the same time in real time for that particular patient. And thus, OncoNexus was born, where Nexus essentially means exactly what I said. It connects the dots or the nodes across the clinic.
No, definitely. I mean, like you mentioned that word Nexus, it's kind of like bridging both the worlds, right? You are kind of like filling in the shoes, sometime as a technologist, sometime as a clinician. And I feel like this kind of perspective is very rare, but this is something should be our future and we are heading into. And I imagine it gives you more of a, like, an unique insight into where AI can actually help in the healthcare industry versus where it's just the hype, right? So you are literally like living that reality where we can see that how we can harness the power of AI to build something on, bring some innovative thoughts that can probably alleviate some of the industry problems or some of the like growing pains that we've been seeing in the healthcare data, starting from, you know, pharmacist clinics, from, you know, any pharmaceutical marketing area or even like a big pharma's. So great. Thanks for your, you know, your perspectives for sharing with us so far. Let's talk about what's actually working right now. From your vantage point as a practicing oncologist, where is AI having the biggest real-world impact in healthcare today, particularly in cancer care?
So I think the biggest benefit of AI in healthcare today is actually on the back end in drug development and in designing newer agents as compared to what existed before. So to give you an example, I was speaking with a medical representative, and a new drug or a molecular structure that sometimes takes biological engineers months to develop, with the help of a new large language model, took only about 7 days. And so that is groundbreaking in case of AI. But where we are lagging in AI in terms of the largest space to fill is something that works for the clinicians on the front end, where patients actually exist, as opposed to in the lab where new drugs are being developed. And that's the real hope, that one day we develop systems that use and harness the power of large language models in being able to optimize outcomes for that particular patient and that particular doctor to the cleanest possible extent in real time.
Yeah, that's kind of like fascinating. And it's a really a great area to tap into, especially in terms of utilizing AI, like how we can simplify the cancer cure, that the whole pipeline of like the conversation between physician or oncologist and the patient, and how we can simplify the process of data collections. And I feel like that's where the AI could be take a pivotal role. So, and it seems like it's not even like just hypothetical. I mean, we can definitely do that by utilizing large language model at this moment. And I believe your organization, OncoNexus, are kind of heading in that direction. Having said that, I'll definitely encourage our listeners to kind of take a look at the podcast vlog descriptions where I shared the OncoNexus link. So please feel free to check out their website and see what kind of mission, vision, and objectives they're trying to thrive in the persuasion of AI in the healthcare area. Now, let me push this the envelope a little bit in the direction of cancer care. In oncology specifically, what problems can AI solve that traditional clinical methods really struggle with? And why is AI uniquely suited to tackle those challenges? You mentioned a little bit about, like, you know, utilizing AI to kind of like, you know, just build up new prescription drug discovery and those kind of stuff. Could you please elaborate a little bit on that?
Absolutely. So there are so many different areas where large language models can potentially improve the outcomes of a patient. it starts all the way, you know, we can largely divide it into something that's preclinical, which means the patient hasn't yet stepped into the clinic. We are talking in that arena about drug development and clinical research and suiting the certain patient profile to a certain research, modulating research trials, etc. But also, we have to talk about the clinical aspect of it once the patient steps into the clinic. To speak in that regard, if you look at the workday of an oncologist in today's day and age, every oncologist probably receives about 1,000 to 2,000 faxes on a daily basis, each with a different patient name and date of birth. And it's sorted through on the back end by a number of people that go through the faxes, make sure it is in the right patient folder, leading to human errors. And that's just a very small part of where I think large language models could automate systems and make it faster, where systems actually speak better with each other and we are not so siloed in our smaller EHR worlds in that particular clinic. Similarly, if you look at the patient experience, a patient comes in and says, Dr. Swaroop, I had cancer and a chemotherapy treatment related to that cancer was scheduled on Monday. And I had told somebody that I'm not going to be here because I would be away for 2 weeks. The nurse whom that patient spoke with turned out to be a new nurse who did not realize that that's an important piece of information that the rest of the team needs to know about. And it went on to that patient basically losing that appointment slot, which may not sound like a big deal, but on the back end, the clinic lost about $12,000 because that medication expires if it cannot be given to the patient within a certain time frame. Similarly, the clinic paid for the nurse who is supposed to and is trained to give that medication because you have to arrange for that infusion nurse in advance. And there are dozens of such incidents that I can talk to you about, which means that information is passed on between a patient and a doctor or a doctor's organization or a clinic constantly at every point that the patient comes in contact with a physician. And if any of that information is lost, it leads to real-time harm both to the patient and the organization in medical as well as financial ways. And we are aiming to prevent exactly that because every conversation is monitored in a manner where if it is relevant to patient care, it picks up on those cues and makes sure that the necessary people on the back end, for example, in this case, the scheduler, are made aware that this patient is not going to be here. So the patient should not be scheduled for this visit for the next 2 weeks. And that in turn would have stopped the medication from being ordered, from that nurse having to spend time waiting for that patient to come in and not being able to, that patient feeling frustrated that he wasn't able to get that medication.
I think that's a really a great example of, you know, where probably AI can be leveraged to simplify the process and also helping us with retrieve and accurate data and also kind of like help us guard safeguarding against some financial risk or even operational risk in the healthcare sector. But I want to dig a little deeper in that sense. Like there's a saying that, you know, AI is only as good as its data. So now, you know, given that example that you shared with our listeners, as a clinician who works with, you know, like real patient every day, how do you think about data quality or bias or even conflictness when applying AI to patient care? If you can just tie that back to that example that you shared, that how we can, you know, how we can properly assess that the AI is going to be, you know, act properly, because at the end of the day, AI is also going to get fitted by some sort of a data, right? So how do you make sure that the AI output is accurate and that's going to actually help us mitigating some of the risk?
Absolutely. I think the important word you struck upon in that question was bias. Bias in terms of recency bias, bias in terms of certain assumptions that the system can make when a person interacts with the healthcare system. And so bias isn't just a moral issue in healthcare. I think it's an engineering defect. We need to actively look for biases and correct them as we move along. If we talk about that particular patient, though, that I just spoke about who was away and missed his treatment, in his case, that bias was basically human error. And the way you prevent that from happening is by keeping human in the loop. If the system picks up on a cue that seems to be relevant And, you know, it basically raises a flag that, hey, somebody should be looking at it. The human in the loop becomes a very important thing there, because when that flag is raised, OncoNexus doesn't directly change any patient care. It doesn't go in there and change a schedule. It doesn't go in there and suddenly the schedule is gone for that patient for 2 weeks. There is always a human in the loop. You will read that there is a flag on this patient, and that flag would have to be resolved by the end of the day, for example. And that would help you know that, yes, there is someone that looked at this, and this is a human decision that was made, but based on something where the system is simply flagging that, hey, you should not miss this particular piece of information.
Yeah. No, I think that is really a valid point, you know, especially in today's AI world. I mean, like you mentioned, just echoing what you just said, keeping human in the loop. I think that's something prevalent in any area, not even in healthcare sector, especially when you're utilizing AI. It's kind of our moral obligation for us to making sure that somebody's like fact checking what AI is kind of flagging or providing outputs for. And I think that's where I guess probably OncoNexus is doing a great job making sure that there's always been a human in the loop who can keep monitoring that AI output, even though it's adding more value and probably reducing some manual interventions and making sure that, you know, the process will be less human error prone, but we're still going to be making sure that there is a human who's fact-checking whatever AI is spitting out. So I think that's just should be the norm going forward in not only for any AI-driven clinician like practices, but in every area. So I totally 100% agree with you what you just said about keeping humans in the loop. Now, moving on to that, since we kind of like talk a little bit about that keeping human in the loop, that's kind of like taking me to that trust factor. So like because you know as you mentioned that AI is could be technically sound, is definitely going to help physicians and patients kind of like, you know, to collect more data from their conversation and stuff. But what if physicians and patients don't trust the AI system? So then it won't be used, right? You know, what if like, you know, there's someone opted out to, you know, use OncoNexus AI system for during their conversation. So in that case, how do we build that trust when AI is being used in diagnosis or treatment planning, or even a general capture process during a conversation between a clinician and patient, especially in something as serious as cancer or some, you know, chronic diseases. So what's your point of view on that? How do you make sure that you gain the trust from the patients so that, you know, they will be willing to support the processes driven by AI?
Thank you for that question. I think it's a very valid question, and it has come up a number of times as I have spoken with many colleagues and patients. In fact, even very recently, where there was a very heated discussion on how AI is about to replace doctors. And I, in fact, wrote and published on this about a couple of weeks ago, where AI versus doctors is the wrong question. Now, I think the key word in terms of trusting AI is transparency. If the system is transparent and we are transparent to our patients as well as our colleagues, if it is not seen as a black box that simply takes in data and spits out a decision, and it is able to explain the reasoning and the logic behind why it says what it says. So for example, still going back to that one patient and one conversation, AI would basically quote verbatim what the patient said. The command should be reschedule the patient 2 weeks out to the scheduler. And the verbatim quote from the patient would be, I'm out on my daughter's wedding for the next 2 weeks, said by X patient on by date and time. And so I think if we stop treating it as a black box and we start explaining why it does what it does and what's the reason behind that a particular suggestion being made, that amplifies the amount of trust and increases the amount of dependency that we have on artificial or large language model systems. And I think it makes us better in terms of our care in that way.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great answer. And thanks for that, because at the end of the day, transparency is huge. I think patients and clinicians really want to understand why AI is becoming a recommendation to them, not just the what it is doing and how it's simplifying the process. It's definitely important to address the why here. Obviously, we understand that AI needs to fit into the existing flow to or not creating a parallel workflow that requires extra clicks or cognitive load, anything from a human person, right? So, I mean, in your opinion, what does a good AI-enabled workflow design actually look like in a hospital or cancer center? Or you can even like share some examples from your experience with OncoNexus.
I think good AI or good large language models, as they work in the system, they should feel like a subtraction, not an addition, which means that when I'm introducing it to a doctor or a patient, it should feel like a weight has been taken off their shoulders rather than them dealing with five different windows, trying to coordinate the five different LLMs that are working in order to do five different things. And so the way OncoNexus works is once you are logged into the system, unless you have logged out and keeping in mind the different data security endpoints, you would see that it works as a silent assistant. It listens and it's invisible unless you need it. And it is auditable when you invoke upon the audit, and it is always measurable by the time saved per encounter. And so those are the metrics that would matter. Is it really saving you time? Is it really saving you money? And is it really simplifying your work life? Because if the answers to those questions are no, then you probably don't have the right model working with you.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about the future. We kind of already almost here. We're kind of heading towards that. It's called precision oncology. It's kind of like a famous term, we hear the term a lot, tailoring treatment based on individual patient characteristics. So how close are we really to precision oncology, and where AI can tailor treatment plans based on genomic data or EMR patterns and real-time patient response, which is something I guess OncoNexus already started exploring.
Absolutely. So precision oncology as a term has existed for quite a long time, probably closer to 1.5 to 2 decades now. But in the context of large language models, it is being discussed more and more as we move forward now. I think we are halfway there scientifically, but only about a quarter way there operationally. What I mean by that is large language models are already doing some of the heavy lifting with some well-known models where they are able to match a patient in a system to a clinical trial that might be open. So to give you an example, about 3 years ago when I was working at a certain cancer center, I was a co-investigator in about 70 or 80 trials at a time. There is no human that can remember the intake criteria for 80 different clinical trials in one go. And so you used to walk around with this clinical trial nurse who would basically manually take every patient's data and try to match it and fit it into a system. And now that part has become automated in some universities where patients are auto-matched with the clinical trial that they might fit into, and again with a human in the loop. Now, precision oncology goes a step further, as you mentioned, because it is not just about matching a patient to a clinical trial. It's about matching a patient to either a clinical trial or maybe even a regular standard of care, which is feasible and suitable for that particular patient. So, for example, if that patient says, I have lung cancer, and the patient has infusional medication that is also standard of care and an oral pill that is also standard of care, and then the patient says that I cannot drive, it is automatic that if you are truly being precise about that particular patient's care, you would not choose the infusional agent because the patient cannot drive. Mm-hmm. So that's where OncoNexus would perhaps add to that that logic, that it might at some point be able to flag that, hey, this patient has no means of transportation. Do you really want to go ahead and give this patient a once a week infusional agent? Because now you have to worry about how to transport this patient to and from his home to the clinic.
I think that's a great example. And thank you for sharing that. And it's great to see that OncoNexus is kind of like helping a clinician or, you know, their hospitals and stuff making the decisions beforehand. And that's probably alleviating some of the pains. And also it's probably reducing some financial risk and stuff. So it's great that AI is kind of honing on its, you know, power to reduce some of these, you know, processes or process gaps or limitations that have been going on for a long time and kind of like, I would say, creating a bottleneck in the healthcare sector and causing a lot of money. So now I want to move on to the next segment, which is kind of one of my favorites. It's ethics and policy. And as we all know that we can't talk about AI in healthcare without addressing the ethical questions, especially around data privacy, model transparency, accountability, and some other like abstract, you know, like the real concerns. So I know these kind of concepts definitely have real consequences. So in your opinion, what policies or guardrails do you believe are essential as AI becomes more widespread, not only in oncology, in other healthcare sectors as well? And is it something that you are doing at OncoNexus to making sure that this policy guardrail is going to be adhered to?
Absolutely. Regulation and policies and ethics in AI health in healthcare goes hand in hand, and something that needs to be accounted for right from the beginning as you develop your large language model, as opposed to an afterthought after you have had your product around for a while. I think the three important principles for AI, use of AI in healthcare, would go back to explicit consent, both from the patient and the provider, related to the use of large language models. Traceability of the information that's collected, where you can audit what was collected, and almost in a chain of command manner, where every system, everything that is collected, modified, or disseminated, let's say, to a team of healthcare providers, needs to be auditable and be completely visible as you need. So traceability and consent. More importantly, there is also containment, where if you have an AI, and AI makes errors sometimes. You know, a person famously once said, AI is the dumbest as it could be today, and it is only going to get smarter as it goes forward. But keeping that in mind, containment is important, where if your language model is sandboxed within that particular system, within that particular clinic, and an error happens, it doesn't suddenly overflow into 10 or 100 different clinics. It is just that clinic that's affected, and that can be easily contained and immediately corrected, so to speak, without affecting a large number of people. So those are, in my opinion, the three important things that need to be there, which is traceability, consent, and containment.
Love that. And thanks for sharing your viewpoints on that, because this is a very kind of, sometimes it can become a very concerning matter. And obviously, at the end of the day, in the healthcare area, we are dealing with patients' records. It's a personal identifiable information, or PII data, or sometimes it's going from to PHI, like personal health information. So obviously, from a patient perspective, from a consumer perspective, there's always a concern about how the data is being used and how we are not creating a scenario where AI is going to be biased towards a certain outcome. So thanks for sharing your perspective on that. Now, this also kind of brings me to my next question, which is kind of like another ethical concern. I would say a fear looming largely, not only on healthcare sector and other areas as well, but since our podcast, this episode topic is more concerned around healthcare. So I'm going to probably say that in a way that AI, does AI have the potential to replace doctors? Because that's kind of like the fear, especially pronounced in specialties like oncology and other areas as well. So how do you approach that conversation? And I'm pretty sure you already kind of like came across similar kind of a little unpleasant conversation with people. And how do you tackle that? And what message that you would like to provide to the masses about that AI is not something that's going to replace doctors, but maybe they're going to make the doctors a super doctor. So what's your take on that?
Absolutely. Thank you for that. I think AI is not going to replace doctors. And the reason why I say that is not because I don't see the capacity of or the increased potential in AI. In fact, I see it more than probably most doctors out there. The reason I say that is because AI is capable of diagnosis, capable of treatment decisions, but it is not capable of care, which means that AI might be able to diagnose a very rare disease. In fact, this was proven very recently at a larger university experiment where a well-known diagnostician was given a certain case, which was rare, and a large language model was given the same case and the same information. The large language model and the doctor both came to the same diagnosis of Lofgren syndrome, which is a rare subtype of sarcoid, except the doctor took a week and AI took probably about an hour to get to it. Now, the reason why that's important and why that's amazing to me is because there isn't a large university-trained diagnostician here in rural Arizona. In fact, that patient might have never reached that diagnosis if he had lived somewhere around here. And so that's where I see the role of AI being very, very prominent as being the great equalizer. It doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter how remotely you live or what part of the world you live in, for example, even if it's, as we call, you know, a less developed country where there may not be a diagnostician or diagnostic capabilities. Well, the large language model equalizes that field by being able to make that diagnosis very easily and clearly, regardless of where you are located. But real care doesn't begin just with that diagnosis. Real care begins after that diagnosis has been made. AI cannot hold a patient's hand and say, this is stage four and I cannot take it away. It cannot read silence or grief. It cannot look at you and say, that's a look of disbelief or that's a look of shock. It can offload the noise. It can take away the clicks, the charts. It can take away the billing labyrinth that every doctor is facing every day. And that's what we want. We want the doctors to be human again. We want them to reach their patients. We want to restore humanity in medicine. And that has been eroded in today's medical circles.
Fascinating. Thank you so much. It seems like AI is going to take away some of the monotonous operation part that the clinicians are doing so they can be more human, they can be more compassionate, or they can probably show more of their human elements that's going to help a patient to gain more trust. Or maybe sometimes I think there is a saying that, you know, doctor's word could also heal a patient's, like, some person. And I forgot the saying right now, but I feel like that AI is probably going to enable clinicians to become more human. So I love the perspective that, and obviously to our listeners that I guess probably still kind of a little concerned about whether AI is going to take over some of the specialist job. I mean, at least that's not happening in the clinical area, because doctors are still going to remain in their jobs and they're probably going to be a more super doctor or compassionate doctor that's going to help the patients to heal their in the disease more quickly. And who knows? And AI is probably going to help them in accelerating their treatment processes, but not replacing them. So now, since we are kind of talking about this part, I really wanted to go a little further ahead. And now we are kind of at the end of this discussion. But so I wanted to close it by looking ahead. Like it's 2025, you know. So let's say maybe in 10 years down the line, what is your vision for AI-driven cancer care? And what breakthroughs do you believe are most realistic in that time frame? And something that excites you the most? And you can share your perspective, you know, based on what you're doing at OncoNexus right now.
I think the next decade would bring in and would belong to what has been widely known as ambient AI or ambient oncology, where the constant issues of documentation, billing, coordination, navigation that happens around the clinician would in fact happen around the clinician, not because of them, not because of the constant work that the clinician is putting in towards these things happening. It would happen because the clinician said or had a discussion with the patient, and it basically happens because the AI system that exists in that hospital or in that clinic ambiently captures the data, the real-time tumor boards, the scan reports, the things that the patient said about his availability or his car breaking down. And care plans would be like living documents. It would be a system where computers do not exist in an exam room anymore, where you aren't constantly looking at it because the ambient AI is taking care of all of that on the back end. In fact, AI itself would have disappeared into the background and would not be something that you click on your computer. And patients would start to see that care is now faster, safer, and finally personal again, where just like in the good old days, your doctor walks into a room, already knows what's going on with you because he has been updated by the system, and he is able to talk to you, one human to another, is able to come up with a coherent and reasonable plan that is in your best interests based on that information. And that's what excites me the most. That's when we would finally be able to say, technology is finally out of our way.
I think that's a great, inspiring vision. It just like, I'm thinking about that while you're talking, it's just like a doctor kind of walking into the clinic and they're talking to your patient. And the doctor already knows about, you know, what's the real issue is, you know, what kind of diagnosis result and stuff, because AI kind of like keeps that doctor updated. So it's more about like, you know, talking about like maybe some human conversation, just a general conversation, not just starting off with, okay, your diagnostic results say this, or like, you know, just going through a checklist. So I think the checklist part will be taken care of by AI, and the doctor will be probably engaged in a different kind of conversation with the patient. So yeah, I mean, that doesn't sound like a sci-fi movie to us anymore with the power of AI and large language model. And we're fascinated to see how we will head to that direction in future. And definitely we should keep an eye on OnConnexus as they are kind of taking a pivotal role in terms of, you know, utilizing AI and take the healthcare clinical treatment processes into the next level. So keep an eye out on OnConnexus and follow them on social media for sure. Now, that kind of brings me to the final question. What's the one thing you wish more people understood about AI in oncology or in healthcare area?
I think the one thing to understand is it is easy to throw a large language model into the market and say, well, go ahead and use it. It is much harder to do it in a responsible, ethical, transparent way where it stands to scrutiny and actually benefits the people that it is made for. And the reason is because most of the models that are currently present in the market are made not by clinicians, but simply by people that are on the outside of the clinic. Designing these clinics with the provider or the healthcare personnel in the loop is extremely important as you develop these products. Why? Because that will help prevent all the mistakes that we have made with our EHR systems in the past decade. We launched EHR systems to make our lives easier, and yet the average doctor spends about 4 hours in documentation in today's day and age. I never thought I would say this, but we have finally got a reset button with large language models. It is important, and I would urge both patients and clinicians to take a keen role into the development of large language models. This is very likely the future. And we need to have a say in how we shape it and develop it, because this is the future you are looking at.
Dr. Sriman, thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your vision about how AI can revolutionize the healthcare area with us today. And if my listeners would like to get in touch with you, how would they connect with you?
I have a website called www.drswarup.info, and there's a contact form there. That would be the best way to be in contact with me. I also have a LinkedIn page if you wanted to message me directly. Those are the best ways to contact me.
Thank you, Dr. Sriman. It was a great discussing with you about a very timely topic, especially something that's very close to my interest. Thanks for all your time and expertise and your visions for this discussion. Now, for my listeners, if you want to learn more about what is going on in the AI and healthcare, I'll definitely share some links in the blog description. Please check them out. this conversation has been not only enlightening, it's definitely a groundbreaking too, at least to me. I'm pretty sure you would resonate the same thoughts with me as well. It's also a reminder that the future of healthcare isn't just about algorithms and dataset, but about human-centered designs, ethical frameworks, and ultimately better outcomes for patients with AI-driven cares. Thanks for listening to Data Science with Sam's another intriguing episode. Until next time, stay tuned and please follow my channel on podcast and other platforms and like, comment, and subscribe as well. Thank you.